The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by the Vacation Planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. And if you want top-notch service and the best value for your vacation dollar, visit them at MEI-travel.com or MouseFanTravel.com. Also brought to you by All-Star Vacation Homes, who offer you the highest quality in either a vacation home or condo. Hospitality has a new name, and it's All-Star Vacation Homes. Visit them at www.allstarvacationhomes.com.
Hi, this is Michael Wardian, and I love listening to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa. Love that dirty water.
Special thanks to the Dropkick Murphys and Michael Wardian as we welcome you to a special episode, episode 166 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and allow me to introduce my co-host and finisher of the 118th running of the Boston Marathon, Michelle Scribner-McLean. Michelle, welcome, congratulations, and most importantly, how are you feeling?
Boy, does that sound good. I may have to listen to that introduction again a few times. Maybe I'll make that my ringtone for you. We could talk about it during the show. I'm okay. I'm ecstatic. Emotionally, I'm, you know, very drained and happy. But it was a great experience, and we're going to get a chance to talk about it. But before we do, I have some shout-outs. And this is multiple shout-outs. I have a lot of people that I want to congratulate and also thank. There are so many friends, and I hope I don't miss somebody. Maybe our guest today will correct me if I do. But I want to give a shout-out to Jeff and Barbara Galloway, who I saw at the expo. They were finishers. Run Disney nutritionist Tara Guidis, Run Disney race director John Hughes was there. Some of our listeners, Mark Brinkerhoff, Phil Cordero, our buddy Heather Melito Dizan, Judy Graham Garcia was also there. And our guest today, I want to give him a big shout out. He's always an inspiration to me. And also to my family and to all the Mickey Milers and Mickey Miles podcast listeners. The support was just unbelievable, the virtual support. But also to special friends, Rich, our show notes guy, who drove 2 hours from Connecticut to cheer us on, and Charlie Gessner, who's been on the show as well, who drove 2 hours from New Hampshire to come. And especially to the millions of people who were just the most amazing crowd I have ever seen. We're going to talk about it more, but I just can't say enough about it. I'm so proud to be from Boston after this experience, and I can't wait to talk about it more. So that's my very long shout out today. Thank you for indulging me.
And of course, the one person who Michelle was alluding to, is our special guest, was also a first-time runner and finisher of the Boston Marathon on Patriots Day in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. He is none other than our own Eddie McCoy from Villa Rica, Georgia. Welcome, Eddie. Congratulations, buddy. And how you doing?
I'm doing great. Much better today than I was on Monday afternoon. But, man, it feels great to be a Boston Marathon finisher.
Yeah, it's a race unlike any other, as
one other sporting event has been so aptly described. So we thought that, yes, this is a this is the Mickey Miles podcast. And, yes, we talk about all things run Disney. But we have many, many Disney connections just from Michelle's shout out. All those people have run Disney connections. They're either listeners of the show, run Disney officials, members of the Mickey Miles podcast, are just a very, very important friends that we wanted to give a shout out to. And we've had requests that we do a little review on the Boston Marathon. So that's why Michelle and Eddie are here. And so we'll try to do the best job we can. And Eddie and Michelle, I guess, would you like to start with the expo and tell us a little bit about what the Boston Marathon Expo is all about?
I'll let you go first, Michelle. You got there a little earlier than I did.
Oh, sure. Thank you, Eddie. So it was really interesting because I think because we've gone to so many Disney expos, I did compare it. I thought that it was well, right away I noticed that the runners were – there are a lot of elite runners, very, very fit people. The expo itself I think is smaller than the January expo. It was in the Heinz Auditorium in Boston. And lots of volunteers there, pretty easy to get to. The packet pickup was on the top floor. It went flawlessly. The volunteers there were just unbelievable. I picked up my number, and a woman stuck out her hand and said, you know, good luck. You're going to do a great job. The shirt pickup was really easy. They gave you a chance to exchange shirts if you want to. And then the expo is downstairs, and it was kind of a strange setup. It was kind of two halves, one half. It wasn't two halves. One was kind of like 25% and then 75%. And there was kind of a restaurant in the middle or some sort of a snack thing in the middle. But a big, big presence from Adidas, the official race wear providers for the Boston Marathon. The line, when I was there, was absolutely huge. It rivaled any Disney line that you'd ever want to see. And I spent quite a bit of money, but I asked, and the people who were checking me out said that some people had spent like $850. I spent a little bit less than that, but lots of stuff, really cool stuff. A lot of people who are in Run Disney Expos were there. The Sweaty Bands people were there. Also, there was a very small Run Disney booth. I got to talk with Jeff Galloway and also John Hughes a little bit later. It's funny, people, it just was a much smaller deal. And they were giving out brochures about Run Disney, and I took one and kind of chuckled. But one of the special things for me about the expo was I went over to the Skirt Sports booth and ran into the owner, Nicole DeBoom, and they have a whole new line of clothes called 261, and it's inspired by the number 261, which is the number that Catherine Switzer wore in 1967 when she was the first woman who ran the Boston Marathon. She signed up under the name KV Switzer, and they didn't know she was a woman, and the race director actually tried to take her out, kind of pull her off the course, and her boyfriend tackled the guy, and she, with friends, she was able to finish. But what an inspiration, really cool person, so I liked the expo very much. I didn't, aside from Boston Marathon official gear, I didn't buy a lot. But boy, was it! It was crowded. It was really, really crowded. And second time we went back, I ran into Eddie. So take it from there, Eddie.
Yeah, I was one of the guys that spent quite a bit at the Adidas booth. I tell you what, the merchandise was, like you said, was phenomenal. What I noticed at this expo was there was so much Boston-specific gear or special gear. Your buds the only buds they had were Boston Strong Edition, and they were giving out shirts if you bought those. So, of course, I bought one. Always need a new set of buds. But there was so much cool Boston gear. I mean, that was what floored me, is how much just by every vendor. I mean, and you talk – North Face had a big setup. Adidas, as we said, New Balance. Any major name in running was there. And actually, I think it was bigger than the January Expo. I think what's deceiving is the wall between the fourth, as you said, and then the three-fourths. But I actually went back and took my time on Sunday and went around the whole expo. But I was thoroughly impressed with everything they had the expo. But I mean, we'll wrap it up there. But it was first class. It was a great induction to what you're going to see at this race. I mean, it starts off first class. And let me just say this: anybody who runs Boston, the email communication you get from them, and I don't know if it was like this in years past, was unreal. I mean, they were so informative on everything. If you got to Boston, didn't know what was going on or what to do, then you weren't reading your emails.
That's absolutely right, Eddie. I agree 100%. Lots of details, lots of frequency. Even today, we got an email talking about what our race results were and things like that. I wanted to say too that we're not going to talk about this too much, but a whole bunch of us went to a Boston Institution Durgan Park, and you want to talk about what we had, Eddie, that was themed around the Boston Marathon for dinner?
Yes, and it's also something you could find at the expo, by the way.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, Samuel Adams has a special brew that they do just for the Boston Marathon weekend and for the marathon itself, called 26.2. And of course, our waitress just thought it was 262, but hey, it worked. And I have to say, that was a delicious beer that I had on Saturday, nothing on Sunday. And
part of the race swag too was a really cool like a bottle opener too.
Oh man, that bottle opener is probably the coolest swag I've ever gotten in a race.
Yeah, so it's a Boston Marathon. Yeah, it's Sam Adams Boston Marathon.
Yep. But anyways, that kind of wraps up the expo, I think, doesn't it?
I think you're right. It was just really well run, I thought. Even though it was really busy, it was very well run.
Absolutely.
I'm probably dating myself, but this was the, believe it or not, this is the 50th Boston Marathon I have ever witnessed. And this was by far the one that had the most emotions and captured my interest most of all. So I'm really curious to hear your experiences. And what I would like to do is start off with you, Eddie. And I'd like you to walk us through the day from the time you got up to the time you crossed the finish line.
All right. Well, I got up that morning about 4:30. I was in the first wave, so I had to be down to the Boston Commons. The first buses were leaving at 6:15, and I wasn't going to chance not knowing exactly how I was going to get or make sure I was going to get there on time. So I left the hotel at 5:30 and got to the Boston Commons at about 5:45 and waited on got to the Boston Common and caught school buses. And I tell you what, this is the first time I've ever run a point-to-point race. So usually you start in an area for most races and you finish somewhere close by. Well, this is a new experience being driven all the way out to the start line.
And, oh, Eddie, so you've never run a point-to-point race before?
Nope.
I'm surprised.
That's my first point-to-point.
Wow.
But I tell you what, when you ride that long, you go, oh, crap, I got to run this back.
I was thinking the same thing. And I kind of knew where Hopkinton was, but yeah.
And we got to Hopkinton, and we got to the Athletes Village, and I was probably one of the first buses to get there. And I tell you what, the time you got off the bus, the first thing you noticed was the military and the police presence. I mean, there were police officers, police cars, military police, you name it, state police, everywhere. You knew we were in a very secure area. And we entered the Athletes Village, which happened to be the back of, I think it was the high school, the Hopkinton High School. And it was back on their track. And they had a huge tent set up where they had water, coffee, Gatorade, bagels, food, plenty of porta potties, and a field with a Jumbotron set up. So we got a little, me and my buddy Roger, who I was running with, I was hanging with him most of the morning. We got a bagel. We went to find us a place on the grass and just kind of laid there until the first wave got called to the start line, which was we got at 9:15. We got called to get in our corral start line. So we made our way, which I think it was about the start from the Athlete Village to the start line. I want to say was what about maybe a half a mile. It seemed like walking that distance, but what amazed me is when we got in the corral, I didn't know how it was going to go off, but I remember I was in the first wave, so I got to hear the elites get announced, and then you heard the gunfire, and it just became a slow walk to the start line. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're running right before the start line, and then off you go. But that's to the start. Michelle, do you want to give your version to your start?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. So I had a different experience because I was running for a charity, and I don't want to dwell on this too much, but I do want to mention that I had a function the day before where there were actually bombing victims who were thanking people who were running for charity. My charity was Spalding Rehab. Kevin Spacey showed up, which was kind of cool for me. People were trying to ask him about House of Cards, but he was just amazing and so supportive, and I guess he had been there for the 5K, which happened on Saturday morning, and a lot of the bombing victims walked with their families and did the 5K. So I had to go to the hospital where our bus was waiting. We had really nice buses, and I actually had to get on my bus at 5:30 as well. And I agree with you, Eddie. I know where Hopkinton is, and boy, every minute that went by, I thought, this is really long. We know in Disney it is, but I mean, you're going way, way, way out there, from the city of Boston to a very rural area. I was dropped off at the Hopkinton Senior Center where our group and the One Fund Boston group, who raised over $700,000 for the One Fund, they were staying there. And we sat there from 6:30 till about 10:15 when we were walked to the start area as well. So our walk was about a half a mile too. And Eddie, I completely agree. You felt the presence. I mean, the corrals were set up in a, the metal bars were set up in a very specific way. You couldn't go past a certain point if you weren't a runner. People checking on numbers. I don't know if this happened to you. Maybe it was just the area that I came from. They did a metal detector wand on every single runner who went through. And I was in the area waiting for the other group to go, and there was bathrooms and just hundreds and hundreds of bathrooms, no line at all. And then when I got into the corral, it didn't feel like it was, people were packed in. It felt very comfortable, but it was a long wait from the time I got on the bus till the time I actually started running. And everybody was saying the same thing. I just want to start running. I just want to start running. So I was an hour behind you to start.
Yeah, but I also want to say one thing at the start line. I don't know if you noticed, they have all these shops where you're starting on Main Street, I believe. Mm-hmm. And there were people out. I mean, they all hanging out the windows. I mean, if they got on, I saw people on roofs. I mean, it was a start. You knew it was going to be a special day when you saw how many people just didn't. And this is in the corral area. They can't even see the start of the race. This is just because it winded down.
I don't know if it happened to you too, but with all that, pomp and circumstance, I just thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I started to have some real doubts right at the beginning. Like, this is really serious. And not that Disney races are not, but I think anybody has a lot of reverence for this race, but I think growing up in Boston, Mike, and maybe you can chime in, this is like something since you're a little kid. You have Patriots Day off and you watch the Boston Marathon. So I thought, what am I doing here? What am I doing here at this race? It was really, I don't know, I was stressed out.
Yeah, it's a I'm so glad that Eddie got a chance to run this race, because as much as you, Michelle, or I, or anybody from the area who've grown up with this race, no matter how much we try to explain what it is, it's not until you experience. And I've never run it, but I mean, I have an idea. But you guys now having run it, and especially you, Eddie, I mean, you can see how crazy the crowds are and how much of a big deal it is. And it's I believe it's the oldest marathon in the continental United States. And
we actually got a note from the BAA tonight that said it was the oldest marathon maybe ever. I don't know. Eddie, did you read that?
No, it's the oldest. Well, it's the oldest in the United States. I don't know if it's the oldest ever.
It said it is the – oh, here it says. It says, this year's event we came together to run as one. We thank you for your participation in the world's oldest and most prestigious annual marathon.
That's well, there you go.
Yeah. So, Eddie, you know, I just want to say, too, that although this was, you know, a lot bigger – not a lot bigger, but bigger than it normally is. I think that as somebody from out of town, maybe you can even get more of an appreciation for what a, you know, a devastating event last year was for just everybody in Massachusetts, because it's so special to us, this race.
Yeah, Eddie.
I was going to say the emotion on the course was very, I mean, it was there from the mile, the start line all the way through. And the one, you know, 1 year stronger, I think, Boston 1 year stronger. I think I saw that motto out there more than ever. And I heard so many USA chants. I heard,
take back our finish line.
Yep. I heard so many. I mean, let me put it this way. To give you an appreciation of running this marathon, I always run with an earbud in. One earbud in, one earbud out with my music. I had my radio up. It's full blast, and I could barely hear it the whole race. And that's no exaggeration.
When I went to sleep that night, I could hear the crowds in my head. It was nonstop, 26.2 miles. I can't think of any place along that whole route, you know, where people could be where they weren't.
If the marathon is 26 miles, there was 24 of it that was guaranteed packed with people. Yeah. The only things I saw that didn't have it were if there was a bridge or if there was just not a place for people to get. Right. That was the only thing that had people. And we're not talking one row deep. We're talking 2 to 3 rows deep most of the time.
Right. And Eddie, one of the things that I've been saying about this crowd, a few things. Number one is I felt like they were pulling me along for the entire marathon. But the other thing is I put my name on my bib, and I felt like everybody was treated like an elite runner in this race. I can't tell you the number of times I heard people say, Michelle, you can do it. I mean, it was just people were going absolutely crazy. You felt like a rock star. Did you feel the same way?
Yeah, I felt the same way. I mean, we can get into – I'll tell you how – my race goes in two different parts for me, and I'll tell you how I felt. The first half of the race, I was running good. So I wasn't paying attention to most. In the second half, I had a lot harder race, and there was a lot of walking for me. And the crowd, if they would see me, they would start yelling, 6612, 6612. That was my bib number. And they kept yelling and yelling and yelling. And, man, you would run, at least till you got out of their sight. but they would cheer you on. If you started running, they called you out. I mean, they were great. I'm telling you, this is – you know, without that crowd and without that race being what it is, I wouldn't have finished any other race. I'm
wow.
telling you.
Wow.
That was
another thing that I noticed too was I saw 4 or 5 sight impaired runners running with guides. I saw a dwarf running, which was just unbelievable. The crowds kind of cleared, and there was this man just, you know, it was so inspiring. I saw double amputees. I saw single amputees. I was inspired by everything around me. It was just so unbelievable. But I want to talk about the heat. Can we talk about the heat?
Before you get in there,
sure.
Want to, the most inspired thing I saw is I passed Team Hoyt at my
yes,
height.
Yes, thank you. I wanted
so
to mention
I,
that.
I saw them, and I'm just telling you, man, those they're remarkable.
And it's their last year running, and there were a lot of just hundreds of signs and, you know, people screaming Team Hoyt out on the trail too. And if you didn't see it, they had a huge group of people running with them, and kind of like a big wave of people crossed with them over the finish line, which is just unbelievable.
And everybody as we passed, everybody yelled encouraging words to them. I mean, it was you knew it was special when you saw them out there. So that was surreal, to be honest with you, to see them out there. So
the heat.
Yes.
Do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. For me, it was, the temperatures were forecasted to be in the lower 60s and sunny starting out. So I thought in my mind, I kept thinking this is going to be a good, this is, should be decent running weather. Maybe a little warm, but not too much humidity. So I felt pretty good about what I saw. But we started, when I started the race, I know it was in the mid 50s. And it was quickly rising at that point. And I noticed by about mile 8, I started getting warm. I'm still – at mile 8, I was feeling good. Mile 10, I was still feeling okay. But mile 12, it just all of a sudden, I just started feeling really bad. And the heat just – the sun, there is no escaping the sun on this
yes,
course.
Yes, there's very little shade.
It brutal. It beats down on you. And as a guy that runs in the dark all the time, it definitely took a toll on me. And by mile 14 or 15, I had stopped sweating completely, and to the point where I was starting to freak out personally. And I would stop at every water station and start drinking water. And I think to the point where I drank too much water, but I still could never. From mile 14 to 15, I couldn't sweat. I couldn't sweat at all. And mile 18, about I could barely run at mile 18. It the last 4 miles were pretty much walk. It was all I could do. I couldn't. Anytime I tried to run, it was just hurting me. The heat just absolutely killed me. And at the end of the day, when I crossed that finish line, I pretty much know I was dehydrated. And I've never experienced it. It's something. It took its toll. I know at least 3 other friends that I know of that were dehydrated as well. So it definitely caught a lot of us off guard. And this is from somebody who drank lots and lots of water going into the week, during the week. I mean, the day before, I drank lots of water, lots of Powerade. I did everything better than I've ever done as far as hydrating. And it just I couldn't escape it. And it got me.
I agree 100%. I did everything. I mean, this is my third marathon, so I knew what to do. I did it. I drank. For me, Eddie, what happened was, of course, I'm starting an hour later than you. And you don't think of this race as being really warm. We run in Florida, but we start running at 6 o'clock in the morning. Here we were running at 11. I started at 11:20. And at mile 3, my mouth dried up like I've never experienced before. It was just completely dry, and it was so uncomfortable. You wouldn't think that would be the thing that was uncomfortable, but I felt like I had cotton in my mouth. And so thankfully, I figured out that I stuck some chapstick into my little belt that I was wearing, and I was able to moisten my lips. But I kept on drinking, and I don't know if I stopped sweating because I was pouring water down my shirt and ice down my shirt every time that I could get some. But I must have filled up my bottle. I was running with one bottle. I must have filled it up at least 10 times. I didn't want to drink too much. I didn't want to drink too little. I was really doubting what I should do. I walked a lot more than I thought I was going to walk. I just said to myself, you need to walk to get yourself together. And then, it was just really, really hard. I had to dig really deep and go to a really dark place to get through it. If it wasn't for the crowds, you go by the half marathon near Wellesley College, the women there, pretty much for a mile are screaming at you. And that was pretty amazing. But it was just really difficult. And then when I finished, one of the stats I heard was that the total number of medical stops last year was 2,400 throughout the whole course. At the end of this race, there were 3,600 medical visits, and most of those were people who were dehydrated. When I finished, I had to go back to find my family and friends at a hotel, and I couldn't figure out where I was going. And I know Boston really well. I actually started to cry, and no tears came out. So it was. It was really, really intense. And so what's been happening, Eddie and I have been in touch today, so now we're recording this 2 days later. I have a thirst like no other. I have not been able to quench my thirst. I've just been drinking nonstop. So, you know, you do all the right things, and sometimes it just doesn't work out. Eddie, would you agree that this you just had this amazing thirst?
Yeah. I, like I said, if water's going out of out of style, I'm drinking it as fast as I can right now. So
this is 2 days out. He sent me a picture of his third liter of water today that he was drinking. So
yeah
it was pretty intense.
Yeah, it was. The heat was unreal. And I can only say one thing to everybody that finished the race in 2012. God bless y'all. I have no idea. That was in the 80s.
Right.
I had a friend that ran it, and he said it was 87 degrees when he finished.
Wow.
I cannot imagine that race. And here's the other thing. This course is something – I studied the elevation chart. I knew the downhills. Yeah. I knew where the hills were going to be at Newton. And the elevation didn't scare me at all. But that downhill, man, it's a killer.
Yeah.
It is a killer. And my legs – they were gone. I mean, I was dehydrated, but my legs were gone.
Yeah, because you start off and you're running downhill. Everybody's running really fast, and you're just going down this hill. Yeah, there are a lot of downhills. The uphills didn't bother me very much. The downhills, yes.
Yeah, and it's not even, and you look at the elevation, you think it's somewhat flat. The thing is rolling the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's a tough course. It is way tougher of a course than I ever thought it would be. So the marathon distance always has my respect. Boston has a new respect for how tough that course is.
My brother has run 20 marathons, and he said it's the hardest course of any place he's ever been. I wanted to talk about your feelings as you approached the finish line. How did you feel? Like I know I had some definite feelings, aside from thank goodness this is over, but getting that medal and just what it meant to finish.
Yeah, there was such a range of emotions, and I had a lot of time to think about it because I couldn't run. So I tried to save up all my energy to when I made the turn on Boylston to be able to run it all the way in. And I started to run, and I just wanted to finish strong so bad. And I ran. I got about a third of the way down there, and I just couldn't. I had to stop, and I had to walk. And, As I'm walking down the last, I walked another third of it, and then I was able to run all the way in. And, I just, the whole experience from qualifying to get to Boston to get there, and yeah, it was a disappointing day, but just, I don't know, I just, the emotions hit me from what it meant from last year to what it meant for me personally, and crossing that finish line. I mean, you said dry tears. That summed me up. I was crying, but there was no tears. But yeah. I could barely talk. And I got a phone call right after I finished from my buddy, my training buddy Roger, who had run it earlier, and he had a good race. And I couldn't talk to him. It's still raw, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So,
I wasn't thinking that I was going to run fast, and I wanted to run faster than I did, but I have to say I saw a lot of people running for the for Martin Richard, the little boy who died in the bombing explosion. I just felt it all. I just felt completely overwhelmed going down Boylston Street. My family and friends were up in the Mandarin Hotel, and they were waving to me about 800 feet from the finish line. And it's a world famous scene, right? You know, everything that happened, but just that there's the city just came together. I just felt so I felt more proud of the city than I did of me finishing the Boston Marathon. I really did. I just felt so happy to be from this place. And I was thinking of you, Eddie, and how happy I felt that you got to see that. And some of our other friends who came from out of town. And I have to say that the bling, when you compare it to something like Walt Disney World 20th anniversary marathon medal or the Goofy medal, it is not as spectacular, but it means so much to me. It means so much to me. It is such a deep level. I can't even express it.
I would give away all my medals before I'd ever give away that one.
Yeah.
So there is something to be said, and I hope they never change it. I hope it stays the way it is. But
we talked too about trying to compare this race to a Disney race, and we talked about it's kind of hard to compare. What do you think, Eddie?
It is totally different to compare. There's such a, you know, Disney, I think of fun. I think of going out to have fun. You know, if it's your first marathon or your first big goofy or something, you're going to be a little bit emotional. But there's no emotion like running the Boston Marathon, at least, I mean, for whatever reason, whether you're running it because you raised thousands of dollars for a great charity or whether you qualified, it's emotional no matter what. And this year magnified the emotion, obviously, from last year. I don't think Disney it's apple and oranges, as you've kind of said before. It's if you ever have the chance to either, you know, if you can push yourself to qualify and run it, run it. And if you can take the leap of faith and raise money for a charity, do it. There's nothing like it. I mean, it's an experience like none other else that I've ever seen.
So people were asking me today at work, would you do it again? So I'm going to ask you and then I'll answer.
My answer is I'm going to bust my butt to get qualified again.
That's so, cool. So your qualifying time for Boston only lasts for a year?
It lasts for like 16, 17 months. So I don't have it anymore. So I have to get my butt in shape, and that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Oh, that's so cool.
Get back. And it's the first time I've ever had Anna go, you need to come back. So she loved it. She loved the city. And I'll say there were so many other events that we didn't mention it, but you know, you want to compare Disney. Also, every Boston runner had the opportunity to go to a pasta dinner. It was included in your in the race. You got to give a little indication, what Boston sends you before the beginning of the race is a book, a runner book. And in that book is a ticket for a pasta dinner, which you have the option to buy additional tickets for your family. I didn't go, but my friend Roger did, and he said it was great. He said it was very festive, and he enjoyed it. And then after, on Marathon Monday at 6:30, they opened up Fenway Park. It's to all the marathon runners and their family.
And I didn't know that.
Yes, and I did go to that. And so it's, you know, we got over there and they were giving out, every runner gave a coupon for either a food or beverage item, and they had the 26.2 brew there. And they had all the World Series trophies out, so you could have got your picture with that.
Wow, I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
How cool.
And then you got to go sit in the park. And then after that, after the party, after the 26.2, or in the Fenway party, they had a post-party at the House of Blues across the street where they did the award ceremonies for Meb and everybody else. I bought tickets for all my family, but the line for the House of Blues, it was a mile long. So I bypassed it. But,
oh, wow. Well, for me, I had to raise $5,000. That was really hard. I'm already starting to think about how I can do it next time because I need to do this again. I really feel like I need to do it. It was just – and I would love – the only thing is I would love to run with somebody else because it was a lonely – I mean, not lonely in terms of the crowds, but I felt like – I wish I had done it with somebody else. But the other thing, too, that I was really impressed with was the number of jackets, you know, of marathon jackets that we saw all around town. You couldn't miss them because they were bright yellow. But I went back into Boston the night after because I was going to a show in the theater district. And even in the theater, there were people wearing their jackets. So they're just a huge presence. And I would definitely do it again. I feel very sore. I have some things to think about. But, you know, my brother, I was kind of decompressing with him. And he said, you always want to go back and do it just a little bit differently. You want to do something to improve. But it was a special gift to do this. Even if I don't, you know, I can't do it again, I feel very, very privileged to have run with people like you and the other 31,900 something finishers. It was great.
No, I think you stated it well. yeah, and I definitely feel like I have unfinished business, so I've got to make it back one way or the other. So, and I said going into this, this is one race I said, you know, if I qualified, I'll run it. Even if I qualified every year, I wouldn't run it every year. I take it back. If I qualify, I'm running the darn race. So that's
Mike, we didn't let you talk very much, did we?
I'm just sitting back and listening, and you know, I'm thinking a crazy thought. I'm thinking, boy, I'm jealous that I didn't get to walk into the dangers of dehydration Monday, because if I was able to do that, that would have meant that I would have been running the Boston Marathon. So it's kind of funny. Gee, I wish I was in that. I have suffered from dehydration, so I know how sneaky it can be. And we had Steve on, Steve Barrett on, Michelle. So listening to you guys, I have admiration for both of you for sticking with it and finishing. And I think that we have heard today that the race was the most watched race in the history of television, I guess. And Eddie, and both Eddie and Michelle, especially you, Eddie, I mean, Michelle probably knew this, but Eddie, when you turn on to Boylston, you got to take that left. That's known as the most famous left-hand turn in American sports. And now you can say you've done it.
Yes, I have. And I've got to do it again. Got to do it again. And I got to run the whole time this time on that street.
Yeah, it's quite a day. And I, as we wrap this up, I just want to say, I want to congratulate the both of you and say I'm proud of your accomplishments. This course is nothing like any other course in the United States. And both of you managed to dig down deep, cross the finish line. And I just want to congratulate you. Eddie, once more, congratulations. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. And Eddie and I did not process any of this. So we were kind of – this is our way of processing. We thought we'd save it for the show. So I'm glad that we got to talk about it. Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you, Eddie. And with some luck, I might see you at the Expedition Everest Challenge. And Michelle, for you, instead of our regular sign-off, we have something special for you. So enjoy. This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast has been brought to you by All Star Vacation Homes. If you are looking for the highest quality vacation home or condo for your next Walt Disney World vacation, then you need to visit them at www.allstarvacationhomes.com, where hospitality has a new home. And by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel, nobody can give you better service and get more for your vacation dollar than the vacation planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. So for your next Disney or non-Disney vacation, visit them at MEI-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
She wears a Red Sox cap to hide her baby dress. The girl she was in New England is different now and then. In all the local bars, she flirts and tells the boys while they're talking. She's from Boston.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.
Somehow she wears a Red Sox cap to hide her baby dress. The girl she was in New England is different now and then. In all the local bars, she flirts and tells the boys while they're talking. skin. She's from Boston. Her toes dig deep and deeper in the sand. She's seduced by the sunsets and her new life at hand. She wears a Red Sox cap to hide her baby dress. The girl she was in New England is different now and then. In all the local bars, she flirts and tells the boys while they're talking. She's from Boston. Too had her baby.